When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, we're about to go nuclear.
Legion of Superheroes number 286, Old Friends, New Relatives, and Other Corpses. Published April 1982. Written by Paul Levis with art by Pat Broderick. Synopsis. Dr. Regulus returns for revenge on Sunboy.
We have the return of Dr. Regulus this week, Matthew.
Right. Zaxton Regulus has many sons, and many sons has Zaxton Regulus.
I don't think he does. I think that's part of his problem, right? That's why he wants to kill Sunboy.
He wants to kill Sunboy out of revenge.
Yes, for giving him radiation so he can't have children.
Right, turning him into a nuclear-powered dynamo.
Yes. Anyway, the issue starts off at a beach party on... Mm-hmm. On R.J. Brand's little lead-lined planetoid. The lead-lined part is really important. That way Superman can't see out. And neither, apparently, can Mon-El. Oh, no, wait. Shouldn't Mon-El be poisoned to death?
Mon-El actually takes anti-lead serum. And I don't believe he's actually on.
Yeah, I think he's back on the base.
Asteroid. Right? He's back at base.
Yeah, he goes on a secret mission trip after a Chameleon Boy.
Secret.
Leaves the party because he just can't handle R.J. Brand being his father and covering it up all these years.
Well, and it is a little weird because Brand kind of comes at him and says, "Goodbye, Jove, son. Now we'll be together always. And I don't have to secretly fund the Legion to get close to you." And Chameleon Boy side-eyes the camera like Jim from The Office. I mean, he is not buying any of this.
It's really weird, right? Because he says, "I don't have to fund the Legion to get close to you," which implies that that was his plan all along, even though Chameleon Boy wasn't one of the founding members of the Legion of Superheroes.
It's weird. It really is. And, you know,
time travel shenanigans or do the Chameleon Boy species, the Kaluans. Do they have some? No, that's the Brainiacs.
That's Brainiacs. You're thinking of the Druids.
Yeah. Do they have some kind of special foreknowledge of events to come?
No, I don't believe they do. But keep in mind, R.J. Brand does, for reasons that aren't clear yet. And he does know things that may be happening in the future. R.J. and Reap are both Durlans, by the way.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. And it is one of those moments that it does feel very awkward to read because, you know, after years of not telling him the truth, Brand is like, "Everything I have is yours, boy, and it should be profitable, too. Yeah-ha-ha. I'm frozen in this shape from that 7 shells of a rock's egg disease." And by the way, has Brand always spoken in weird old-ass Germanic metaphor?
Well, I'm wondering, because he keeps using the word Ymir, Y-I-M-I-R, Ymir, yeah. Which sounds a lot like, with his big mustache and everything that he has, like he's trying to say Yumpin' Yimini, you know, the old Wally the Walrus kind of thing, making fun of Swedes. So I wonder if that's something that they're injecting here, because he's never said by Ymir before this issue, to my knowledge. And if he did, I would have definitely said, why does he keep saying Ymir? What does that mean? That's some kind of weird coding to all the kids in Lapland.
Well, Ymir is actually a character from Norse mythology. He's a giant.
That goes back to
everything.
See what I'm saying? I think he was making fun of the Swedes
when he fought Thor. He's also known as Brimir or Oglemir. But yeah, you do have that weird moment where, again, why is he talking in these strange old quasi-Germanic metaphors? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Now, in regards to him being overly outward about, oh, this is yours, and oh, we're going to have so much fun together, really screams of the absentee father syndrome or the divorced parent syndrome. This does happen quite a bit when, now not to everybody, and I know everybody has their own stories, but when a father is not around, or if the family goes through a divorce and the husband doesn't get, the father doesn't get custody of the kids, oftentimes the husband will go to extremes. Now, again, not all fathers will go to extremes to try and make up for whatever it is, not being around or whatever. And so they're like, come on, kid, we're going to go buy go-karts this weekend. Or come on, kid, let's buy you everything that you want. And sometimes they do it to get back at the mother, to make her look like a parent who doesn't give any of the cool stuff. And I'm the father that always does the cool stuff. Sometimes it's just like, hey, I haven't been part of your life. I want to try to make up for lost time kind of thing. And Bran's interactions with Reap, even it goes only maybe a page and a half in this issue, really to me jumps out as, oh, this guy is just trying to be the good dad making up for lost time.
Trying so hard. And I feel bad for him. I do. But it's more awkward for Reap, honestly, to me, you know, and it's one of those moments where you almost kind of feel like the whole thing is part of a scheme to get close to his son now, because, you know, the Legionnaires' beach party, we've never seen them show up and have a beach party before.
Well, no,
although
because
you do notice
RJ
that Saturn Girl just took off her boots and her evening gloves, and she's just running around in her costume.
Well,
they're admitting that she wears a bikini.
So this came out in 1982, and I remember, and again, still a few years away, but I do remember, like, by 1986, 1987, one of the things that was a big deal throughout the mid-80s through the 90s were these annual swimsuit specials. Or I forget the magazine that came out. It was
Amazing Heroes.
Yeah. They would always come out with this like pinup issue that would have artists drawing all of these well-known superheroes in their bathing outfits and their, you know, their beach wear, and sell that as a pinup special. And that had become a big deal for years and years and years. In fact, just a couple of years ago, I forget the company that has the Street Fighter license, but they even did a kind of a throwback to the 90s swimsuit editions. This kind of feels like we're getting to that precursor where we're going to see, you know, Superman and Batman hanging out at the beach in their swim trunks and Wonder Woman wearing, you know, a bikini instead of a one piece. It just feels like we're a few years away from that, or if we're not already. And this is just one of those kind of tie in things, because this did have the cover date of April of 1982. So this would be on the racks as we're moving into the summer holiday.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the tradition of the beach episode in anime and cartoons too, where, oh yeah, we have to do a recap of half the season. So we're all going to go hang out by the pool, and then we'll talk about, hey, remember how weird it was when that happened? So this is kind of that. There's a little bit of that, because it's driven by that, hey, look, we're going to have this moment. Colossal Boy is going overboard with being competitive, and Dawnstar gets snippy with him and knocks him down. And I mean, it really is some of that, what people refer to as that classic Levitz character interaction, where sometimes the Legionnaires are jerks and sometimes they, you know, they clash with each other for no reason. But then, oh no, there's a big problem. Dr. Regulus is here and everybody's on board. I do really like that, even though Lightning Lad has He-Man's hair.
Yeah, that's the least of the problems. He may not have the hair for very much longer if they're exposed to all the nuclear energy, because Dr. Regulus crashes onto the planetoid And and his plan is to overload the Star Maker reactor so that it not only blows up all the Legionnaires who are on the planetoid, but who are but also the planet Earth, because apparently the planetoid has decided to become the second moon to Earth for this issue specifically. And so all of Earth is in jeopardy, too. And that means Dr. Regulus will get his ultimate revenge against Sunboy.
Yep. And it is nice and it logical as well to see the Legionnaires in action, because Regulus, you know, zaps everybody with radiation, and he hits Superboy specifically with red sun rays.
Yeah.
Everybody's down except for Phantom Girl, who is intangible, and thus, you know, the radiation passes right through her, and Sunboy, who makes it clear that he's powered by solar radiation, and you can't, you know, you can't kill him with coals in Newcastle. Traditionally, had that moment played out, we would have seen everybody get knocked down, but Superboy, and Superboy would be like, well, the book's named after me.
Well, technically, Superboy doesn't get knocked down, because he's like, well, I'm just weakened and I can still absorb a lot of stuff. Remember, I store energy like a battery. And so, you know, my energy will last a little bit. But the problem is they have to shut down the nuclear reactor. And for those of you who are new to the idea of nuclear energy. In the late 70s and early 80s, especially, not only were we under threat from being bombed by the Russians with nuclear bombs since the 1950s, but this idea of, is nuclear energy safe? What's going to happen if we have a nuclear meltdown at a nuclear power plant? Of course, in 1979, we had the Three Mile Island incident. The Three Mile Island incident is a nuclear, Three Mile Island is a nuclear facility in Pennsylvania. And in 1979, Reactor 2 started to melt down. And it was a pretty scary situation. We've seen this happen, right? We've seen this happen in Japan. We know what happened with Chernobyl. This kind of thing in 1979 really freaked a lot of people out. If you've seen the Jane Fonda, Michael Douglas, Jack Lemmon movie, The China Syndrome, it covers that incident, although they don't say Three Mile Island in that. It is just a nuclear meltdown of a sorts. And so I think putting a nuclear meltdown kind of situation into the comic book is probably still relatively fresh on people's minds, I would say, especially if you're talking about any kind of nuclear accident. That's going to be my guess. And that's probably why that is, that this is kind of the key focus of the story, because what happens is Sunboy does go into the nuclear reactor and you can see him actually putting the rods back into their, we presume, lead lined casing, which is, you know, kind of how
Inertron.
Yeah. That's how they keep the nuclear reactors going, is putting them inside their carbon structures so that they can't emit the radiation and cause chain reactions. And so I think that that's probably the big reason why this is here.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
We get a little bit of the old school Legion teamwork, too, because Superboy, who barely has the power to fly in, flies in. Saturn Girl piggybacks on his mind, ready to pass along the information. A brand special reactor that he built himself, and Sunboy's too dumb to undo it.
I mean, so, he is a nuclear physicist. I mean, I don't.
Right. And this is also another one of those moments, you know, how I mentioned the characterization of Colossal Boy as being overly competitive. Everybody underestimates Sunboy, and he's just like, yeah, I've got this. Tell him I've got it under control. And Sunboy literally takes care of it before Brand can transfer him the information.
I'm not sure that's the case, because as soon as Superboy sees Sunboy, he's like, okay, I'm transferring this telepathic communication over to you, Sunboy. And Saturn Girl's like, okay, here's all the information you have. And my assumption is that
Sunboy
I've
already worked it out.
Okay.
Dr. Regulus isn't the only one who underestimated me.
Yeah.
And by the time she tells him, he's already got the thing practically shut down. It's a neat Sunboy moment. And it kind of reminds us that, you know,
even
there's
he's
more
a jerk
to these characters. He's a jerk, but he's a nuclear physicist jerk. And if you put, you know, even Aquaman has a special job to do in every episode of Super Friends.
That's why all the adventures take place near a pond, a river, a big body of water, a bucket of water.
There's always an inlet.
Toilet.
Same problem we had with Night Boat back in the day. But I do like that. And I do like the fact that we get Sun Boy as kind of the center of attention. And a reminder, there's more to all of these characters than we've been seeing. You know, we're starting to really build into what a lot of people will tell you is one of the greatest Legion eras. And part of the reason for that is these little moments of, hey, remember when this happened back in 1964? Now it's really important. And I kind of like that.
Yeah. So this story, there's a lot of cool things that happen. I like the handoff with the telecommunication or the telepathy that Saturn Girl is doing. I'm not really sure that Phantom Girl did anything in this issue. She's like, I'm going to run to the core. And Sun Boy's like, no, no, you're not. I'm going to get there before you. And then she's like invisible. She
ran into the thing and got lost.
And then she sees Superboy fly by and Superboy's like, no, no, just go away. You're not needed here. And they make this huge thing. And maybe it's your Shrek moment there, but it's just this part where we tease at the beginning of the issue that Phantom Girl can pass through things like Colossal Boy. So she can whip around and trip him up. Then she does the, I can phase through your armor, Dr. Regulus. And he's like, well, ho, but you can't. And then she's like, oh, but I'm going to run right through the reactor and shut this down. She does, and maybe it's there to kind of get everybody to go, oh, cool, Phantom Girl is going to save the day. And then it's like, at the end of the story, it's like, nope, girls are dumb. Boys are the ones that solve these kind of problems.
Well, I don't know if I would say girls are dumb.
She got lost in the nuclear reactor.
Okay, but you know what? The Philip is not, oh, she screwed up and was dumb. The Philip was, hey, you guys remember that Sun Boy's a nuclear genius, right?
No. Yeah, no, I think that's fine. And I think
I do love the fact that Dr. Regulus is taken out in two panels flat because he gets distracted and Colossal Boy just comes up and swats him.
Yeah.
Just slaps the snot out of him like you're crushing a gnat. It's a beautiful moment.
Which, again, everything is kind of telegraphed in the first couple of panels of this issue of what everybody's going to be doing later in this piece.
Well, foreshadowing is your clue to quality literature.
I also like that, you know, Chameleon Boy is so upset by his interactions with his dad that he goes home to the Legion clubhouse. And, you know, everybody, the few people that are there on duty are like, have you guys ever thought about why the Coons are always attacking us? Has anyone checked in on the Coons lately? And they're like, no, I guess nobody has. And then Reap shows up and he's like, okay, I'm in charge of the espionage squad. I say we go. And so they're completely out of the loop when the whole meltdown situation is about to occur. And of course, there's some repercussions because Lightning Lad is like, who does he think he is? And kind of pounds his fist into his hand. I'll get that guy. Little does he know that Chameleon Boy has already assumed Lightning Lad's shape and personality for the next five issues.
Oh, stop it. The thing with the Kuns, I don't want to spoil or anything, but it ends up being
a big thing. Yeah, no, it's a big deal.
And it's a major diplomatic incident, and it's basically driven by Cam doing something kind of stupid with his family issues and his, you know, big rubbery head. But
just like Colossal Boy and his mom, everybody has parental issues, everybody. And we're about to find out in the next part here.
A Crown for the Princess, published April 1982. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Keith Giffen. Synopsis: Karate Kid fights to defend his love.
Let's go to Stupid World.
Oh, stop it. It's called Orando.
Yes, otherwise known as a backwards planet of stupids.
No, it's the planet of
the king is dead. Long live the queen. Oh, wait, we can't have a matriarchy in this society. I, the evil cousin, will come out and fight you to the death so that I can remain king. Ooh,
I'm Prince Ferox of the Tree Men.
I, Karate Kid, will take you down with one mighty karate chop because I know all forms of hand to hand combat. Meanwhile, he gets taken out by a single stab with a lance.
Well, hand to hand, but not like, you know, that's a sword. That's different. Hand to hand combat is different than, you know, being punched in the face with a sword. More importantly, you know, it's a magic blast. That's cheating. But again, we do see at least something good in this, because they're kind of building up a little bit of something coming. And she's like, if I have to be the queen, I may have to leave the Legion and be alone. And he's like, no, you won't be alone. And she's like, well, that might mean you have to quit the Legion. And then, of course, you know, the evil cousin shows up to wreck everything. But it's a moment that, you know, again, foreshadowing your literary technique. And it features Keith Giffen.
Yeah.
His triumphant return to comics.
I really like Keith Giffen's art in this. I thought it's really well done. It feels like he's been at another more popular publisher for a while, doing some stuff. And now he's taken all of those lessons, especially like there's a lot of really cool details. Like what you were saying last issue about, who was the last issue? Broderick, I was complaining about. And it's like, he took all of this great background detail and really fills the panels up with really cool looking stuff. And it's good to see Keith Giffen on here. And I think we're about to start a big old long run of Keith Giffen in Legion Comics. And it's going on right here. What was going on prior to this, I guess, Matthew?
Well, Giffen was a very, very young creator when he broke in. He's like 1975. So he's maybe 23 years old. And he started working on All-Star Comics with really, really big names like Wally Wood and Ernie Colone and Joe Orlando. And Keith himself says that he was an a-hole. He was routinely turning in work late. He was dissing these, you know, these really, really long legendary creators, and kind of got drummed out of the industry, basically got run out of town because he was so hard to work with. And the way he tells it is, his fiance, almost to be his wife, saw him drawing and saw that he was so good and insisted that he go back. And he went to Joe Orlando, who was at this point DC's managing editor. And Joe Orlando agreed to give him some backups. He said, you know, we'll give you some backup tales. The first one actually was in last issue, to kind of, you know, get you back into it and prove that you can actually make your deadlines. And that's the point where Keith realized he'd be working with Paul Levitz, who was the writer on All-Star Comics that he had hosed 3 or 4 years earlier.
Yeah.
And so Levitz and Giffen sat down and they hashed it out, and they're like, I'm going to be doing backups on Legion. And apparently Levitz was like, well, here's all this cool stuff that I want to do on Legion, and I want to use a character who will be showing up in an issue or two. And Giffen's like, oh my God, I'm in. So Giffen did the backup this issue, the backup last issue. It won't be much longer before Giffen is literally the main ongoing Legion artist. So it's
literally one issue from this one.
Right. It's one of those things where, you know, a guy who messed up really bad came back and literally walked right into the thing that would make his career. So, you know, I kind of give Keith credit for admitting that he was a jerk, because other people are saying, yes, he was kind of a jerk. And, you know, he did a run. He was on Defenders for a while, and he did a lot of Jack Kirby-esque work. And I think he may have drawn the first appearance of Rocket Raccoon with Bill Mantlow way back in 75 or 76. But this is really the point where, first of all, it's a whole new Giffen, because the second page of the Projector story
What was he doing when he wasn't in comics?
I want to say he said he was a vacuum cleaner salesman.
Oh, really?
But okay. At night he was actually moonlighting. So he'd sell vacuums during the day and then repossess them at night.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
okay,
he was literally out of the industry. And, you know, you get that moment, you know, you feel like, hey, I feel bad for this guy, but also I feel bad for Paul Levitz and Ernie Colone. And I like the fact that he's like, yep, I screwed up. They gave me another chance, and this time I tried to get it right. And
yep,
that's,
and it shows
that's
here. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Yeah. It really shows in this issue, and that may be the only saving moment for this story.
Oh, I like bits of the backup story. I like the idea of, oh my gosh, you know, Princess Projector is going to use her superpowers, And the guy's like, ha ha, I'm immune to your power. Why hasn't anybody ever thought of this before? So on the one hand, you're like, hey, that's clever. But on the other hand, it's you've just nerfed somebody's superpower in the middle of a fight.
Yeah.
You've had two powerful legionnaires get taken down by Beardo McBeardington. And so now we have to, you know, we've set up Ferox or whatever his name is as a threat. But we've also kind of, I feel like, you know, in wrestling terms, we've kind of jobbed out two high level people for a squash match. And then, you know, they're going to have to build back up from this, or, you know, maybe,
or maybe
they'll
not. Maybe they'll both be dead. Legion. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that they're both dead.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
All right. I have a theory, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory that the
Creepy Bunnies,
that the 1980s bunnies. Run of Sun Boy is actually based on President Jimmy Carter. Now, a lot of people
You're going to have to show your work on this.
I'm going to. Now, a lot of people know Jimmy Carter today because he does Habitat for Humanity, and the man never stops working, even though he's like almost 100 years old or 100 years old or past 100 years old, depending on when you're listening to this. Hello, future people. Jimmy Carter is also, people look at him as, I don't know, I think he did, for what he did during his presidency, I think he did fine. But a lot of people point to the gas crisis, not unlike what we're having today, as the reason why Jimmy Carter was a one-term president. Okay? But did you know, Matthew, that Jimmy Carter actually was shut down and cleaned up two nuclear disasters in his career? Not as president. I mean, he didn't roll up his sleeves as president of the United States and walk into Three Mile Island and shut that down. But when he was in the Navy, he was part of this nuclear crew that if there was an issue with nuclear facilities across the world, mostly probably U.S. and Canada, that his team would be dispatched to go in and do it. And the first place that he did it was in Ottawa, where their nuclear reactor was melting down. This would be 1952. He and his team were sent in to shut that reactor down. And because the energy output was so high, this nuclear reactor generally was putting out 30 megawatts. When the plant went nuclear, out of control, I guess, it was averaging between 60 and 90 megawatts, so almost three times its power output. They had to build a model of the nuclear reactor in a tennis court near the nuclear facility, like right outside the nuclear facility, to scale. Like, where are all the nuts and bolts of this thing? Because the team had literally, each person had 90 seconds to run inside, do whatever needed to be done in that 90 seconds, and then run back out. And when they came out, they had to match whatever that person did inside to the mock-up outside. So Jimmy Carter would run in for 90 seconds because that would, they were getting probably 1,000 times the nuclear dosage that they should have been getting today. And they would like unscrew a bolt or put a bolt back in and then run out and say, okay, here's what we did. So, and I don't know how many times they had to do this, but Jimmy Carter later on would say, yeah, for like 6 months later, whenever I'm peeing, it would still, I was still expelling radioactive waste in my urine.
Oh my gosh. That is, and you do, you have to ask yourself, this was 1952.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a man at that point who is, oh, how old is he? 1924. So he's in his 20s.
Yeah.
And now we look at him when he's 97.
Yeah.
97 years old, and he's still going.
And when you look
at James Earl Carter got superpowers.
That's what I'm saying. That he is the basis for Sunboy, because you see that kind of wavy hair that Sunboy has. And you look at the young Jimmy Carter, even if you look at Jimmy Carter, in you know, during his presidency, he has a good head of hair. He's got a good build, like you might see with Sun Boy. And knowing that he's going in and pushing these nuclear rods back into position, you can picture that Jimmy Carter with his, you know, his clothing ripped open and his sweat pouring down his face, just pushing with all his might to push these cores back into place. I think, and again, you got to remember, this issue came out in 1982. Jimmy Carter's presidency ended in, what, 81, 80, something like that?
Spring of 81.
So I think that this whole issue is an homage to Jimmy Carter. Prove me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. Prove me wrong.
Best of DC number 24, Murder in Glass. Published May 1982. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Carmine Infantino and George Perez. Synopsis: the secrets of the Legion's past and their future?
Okay, we are into the... why are we reviewing this? Just because it has every appearance of the Legion of Superheroes? Best of DC number 24 from May of 82?
This book has things in it that happen that are interesting. And the reason we're reading it is because George Perez does like a 2 or 3 page spread with new Legion costumes, some of which get adopted, some of which don't, throughout this issue. Best of DC was actually a digest size book.
Yeah. This is,
you remember, like,
yeah, this is basically taking old stories, putting a wrapper around them and selling them to the unsuspecting.
Yes, but this is actually done by the creators who are doing the Legion run rather than, you know, just somebody out there. You do get Perez in here, regular Legion writer Paul Levitz, and weirdly, Carmine Infantino, who, I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of 80s Carmine, and I'm not a fan of 80s Carmine on the Legion at all, but it's in here mostly because of Perez.
So this issue is the Legion members are being awarded some award or something dumb by the president, and the president's putting the things on all the Legion. And then Colossal Boy is just sitting there going, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and I'm going to mouth off to my mother, who just so happens to be the president of the United Federation. And so he's standing next to his mom afterwards. They're stepping aside and some guy runs up and says, Madam President, a quick picture. And she's like, of course I will pose. And he shoots out a beam and turns her into glass. And the second time that the mom has been turned into glass. And while she's down, everyone else is freaking out. Oh, the president's down. The president's down. Now, what year did Ronald Reagan get shot?
1984, I think.
1984. So 1982. We're seeing an assassination attempt on a president. 2 years later, it happens. Everyone else is freaking out.
It was apparently 1981.
Okay,
March of 1981. So
maybe we're seeing, again, this is a reference to an old issue, so it may not be a Ronald Reagan reference of let's shoot a president. You should never do that, ladies and gentlemen. Don't ever do that. Even if you think that Jodie Foster's in love with you.
Don't do it.
And so, you know, Jim is like, oh, it's no big deal. Look, she's got this medallion on. It's still glowing, which means she's alive. This all happened before. Let me tell you, Legion members who are standing here, about this, a story about my parents being turned into glass that you were both present for.
Wildfire was not there, however. So Wildfire could be hearing this story,
I guess,
for the first time.
So we get literally 2 issues worth of story in this from whatever issues those were back in 62 or whatever it is.
Adventure 372 is where Marta Allen was turned to glass. So I think it's 372 and maybe 373.
Yeah.
But it's also the story where Timberwolf and Chemical King get elected to Legion membership, because they go undercover with the group. Basically, the guy who turned his parents to glass is trying to get Colossal Boy to steal the Legion's training modules so he could train his own Legion of Supervillains. And so he finds superpowered people to train, and 2 of them are Timberwolf and Chemical King. and Timberwolf and Chemical King, you know, are undercover with the villain and then the thing and the fight.
Just go back and listen. We did a whole episode about this. So go back and listen like to that one. We don't need to rehash it here.
12 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's literally just something that we did probably about 2 years ago, if anything. You've been listening, ladies and gentlemen. You know this story. I guess my question is, where's Element Lad and why can't he switch her back? Because it wouldn't make a good story.
He would have been a Legionnaire in 372, yes. But I don't know.
Would he have been a member in this issue, 286, that came between 286 and 287?
He would have been, yes. He joined before Chemical King and Timberwolf.
Yeah, so why can't he switch her back?
I don't know. Oh, he's out. He's on
so anyway,
R.J. Brand's satellite.
The glass cannon got smashed. Mm-hmm. And so in order to revert his mom back to normal, they have to go hunt down the original maker of this thing and his robot. Mm-hmm. But apparently that guy mm-hmm. died a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Bim, bam, boom. Turns out the guy on the factory floor is actually the robot of the mad mm-hmm. scientist. And so they look into it. They open up his chest and they pull out the evil tapes and they run them. And they're like, oh, here's the formula for the glass cannon. Let's make this and undo everything that has gone on before. Hooray. I'm not angry at my mom anymore. So I guess the whole point of this week's Legion Clubhouse is parental issues. One, father issues. The other one, mommy issues. And they're both laid to rest by the end of this dumb book. Now, I say it's a dumb book only because I understand. It's a digest.
You're bitter.
No. It's just like they're literally reprinting stuff that we have read before with a very thin veneer of an original story wrapping around it. And yeah. I understand the original stories came out, you know, 20 years previous. And so here's a great way to get the kids to buy a ticket again, to buy the issue again, by putting on these new pages. So I'm a little just like, it just is like, we've seen this story before, literally. And then the end result is kind of dumb.
There is a reason, though, why I put it in here.
And no, I understand. Reason. It's a very legitimate
reason. Is that there is one big plot hook at the beginning of the story that we haven't talked about. During that whole arc with R.J. Brand, where he was losing his money and all of this stuff, and during the last few issues when Colossal Boy is like, my mom is running the government, why is the Legion being so
Why doesn't she love me anymore?
The first page shows her giving them that award
yeah.
because she's trying to basically to
repair
prove that there's no feud between the government and the Legion of Superheroes.
Of course, the Metropolis newspaper of the times is just screaming nepotism. Oh, the president sure has a lot of nepotism with the Legion of Superheroes now. Could it be because Jim is her son? Why is she suddenly changing her mind? We used to be
Jim Allen's laptop. Jim Allen's laptop. Join us tomorrow.
Yeah, it's very weird.
It is. And this is actually an issue that didn't come out chronologically at this time. It actually came out almost a year later than the previous, not a year later, like a month later than the previous issue.
Right.
Actually came out after Legion of Superheroes 287. But the way that it falls in here and that little bit of, hey, we're going to stop being mean to you and stop being mean to the Legion falls right here, according to my careful prosthesis.
So. And we also get a look at the new shuttlecraft that look amazingly like the Cylon Raider ships from Battlestar Galactica.
That's Carmine. Carmine is old school. Very, very old school. And I feel like Carmine follows the Wally Wood rule of never draw what you can swipe, never swipe what you can trace, never trace what you can cut out and paste down. So,
yeah,
you know, you go back to the 1940s, it's all about printing.
The other thing that is really weird is that even though we're looking at stories that are maybe 15 years old at this point, wow, it just looks like we're reading old comics.
The end of the Silver Age and the beginning of the Bronze Age is a massive gulf, and it feels longer than it is. Excuse me, now I have the hiccups. But we get George Perez drawing Block. Come on. How can you not love George Perez?
A large chunk of this issue is also spent. Again, I understand the reason why you got to do it. You're trying to hook the new kids because sales are slipping on the Legion, the once great, powerful Legion comic that could do no harm. And then it started to slip. And so it's like, oh, my God, we better bring Superboy back in. And then it's like, hey, let's do one of these best of issues. And hopefully we'll get the young kids again hooked on the Legion. And so you have to put in a 10-page section on here's your diary. Here's your who's who of the DC Universe entry for every member of the Legion of Superheroes. So I understand how to do all that. I just didn't care for this issue. I was very bored the entire time.
I think this is the much vaunted jumping on point. This is an old school jumping on
point. Yeah, like I said, I understand why they're doing it. I'm just bored. I hadn't known everything that was going on in the issue when I first picked it up. And the minute that they turned her to glass, I was like, we've done this story arc before. And then I go two pages later and it's like, oh, literally we're retelling those stories again. Okay. I get what this issue is doing. So yes.
And you know, it's a thing. It's the comics.
Did you like it?
I loved it. But you have to remember some of my very first Legion of Superhero stories were digest sized reprints. It wasn't DC, best of DC. I was reading Blue Ribbon Digest from the Bogart's grocery store in Beloit, Kansas back in the day. So, you know, this is something that harkens me back to my earliest days in comics. And I really enjoyed it. And I feel like the kind of the balance of this is what used to happen in the Legion against the current Legion stuff really gives me a different kind of a different thought process on that modern Legion circa 1982.
So here's the thing. I said I understand why they did this. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I would have done this because you are showing issues that are outside of the target market's reading age, right? So you're showing stuff that was probably released before most kids were born, and the stuff you're showing them looks archaic. Right. Just because, as we said, that transition between Bronze Age or Silver Age and Bronze Age, Modern Age. And if I were a kid and I was reading this stuff and I was like, what's up with these people's hair and these costumes and why does it look like stuff my parents would be into? I think that might actually do the opposite of what the publisher was hoping in that it might turn kids off because it's like, ooh, what's all this old stuff? Is this what I'm going to get if I go and buy a Legion of Superheroes comic? No, thank you. I mean, that is certainly a thinking of the side effect of this. Even if you were like, oh, cool, I wish somebody would come and turn my parents into glass kind of, you know, fantasy going on there. Oh, my gosh, what if somebody turns my parents into glass kind of fantasy going on? I still think that there's a big potential for this to backfire because the art is so old.
I can definitely see the point, and I will concede you that point. But if you look at the era that they chose, you know, this George Tuska art that we see in here and the art by, I want to say, Swan and the Colossal Boy story is more modern than it could have been, more modern than stories of that same era or not long after would have been. So,
yeah. All right. Well, yeah. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. We have come to the end of another Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that sometimes when you travel to a planet in the 3rd century, things happen that feel like the 3rd century. So what happens in Orlando should stay on Orlando.
I think we also learned that if you intentionally shove a kid into a nuclear reactor, your life is probably not going to go in the direction that you hoped.
And most importantly, we learned that the art of Pat Broderick and a young Keith Giffen and a young George Perez can make me enjoy issues, even if they annoy the heck out of Steven.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's Legion Clubhouse. We enjoy recording these each and every time that we release these. What do we do these on a fortnight, I believe. And and we would really appreciate all the support that you could do if you enjoy these. We want you to join us over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. A lot of good stuff happening over there, and a little bit goes a long way. So until next time, wow, Jimmy Carter, man. Jimmy Carter.
And I'm Let's Hear It for the Boy.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.